A grand jury indicted a Juneau man yesterday on 2 counts of felony assault for allegedly injuring 2 Juneau police officers during an arrest earlier this month. 45-year-old James Cartiti is currently out of custody on bail. According to charging documents, officers originally responded to his Mendenhall Valley apartment in early October after neighbors complained of loud music and movement coming from his place. Cartiti already had a warrant for his arrest for a different crime. Charging documents say Cartiti turned off the music when the officers arrived and began to yell. He allegedly became hostile and slammed his door closed. It was then that the officers opened his door and told him that they had a warrant for his arrest. Police say Cartiti began punching and kicking the officers as they tried to arrest him. The incident left one officer with bent glasses and a red mark on his face. Another officer was taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital for an evaluation of his injuries. If convicted, Cartiti faces up to 5 years of prison time for each of the charges. Floodwaters have receded in Kotzebue and other Western Alaska communities from a storm that hit earlier this week. Communities are documenting damages during the lull before a second, more powerful storm on track to hit the region early next week. In Juneau, I'm Alex Salmon. You're listening to KTOO. And you're listening to KTOO. The Alaska Board of Education unanimously voted to send a proposed regulation change that would have limited how much money local governments can give schools back to the state education Thursday. It comes after public outcry and a change in stance from the state education department. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
The Department of Education and Early Development, or DEED, backtracked on its initial recommendation to the board to change state regulation that defines what counts as local contribution. That's school funding that comes from municipalities. State law restricts the amount of funding local governments can give to their districts. Instead, DEED recommended the board take no action on the change. DEED Commissioner Dina Bishop says the department has been working with district leaders since August to clarify their intentions with the proposal.
Due to the state, I think just the stress about school funding, a lot of trust isn't there. The department wants to earn that trust back and continue with the work.
Many district leaders voiced concerns about how it would affect out-of-cap spending. That's money that local governments give to districts outside of the maximum legal amount. It's for non-instructional purposes like transportation, childcare, and extracurriculars. Many, like the Anchorage and Sitka school districts, also worried about how in-kind services would be impacted. The proposal spurred hundreds of written public comments against the change last summer. Several Alaska district officials and parents testified when the regulation was considered in June and again at Thursday's meeting. Part of the initial reason for bringing this forward was something called the disparity test. That allows the state to use federal impact aid as part of its contribution to districts, which can save the state money. The state failed the test this year and in fiscal year 2022. It's currently appealing the decision. Bishop said during a work session on Wednesday that the department is working through the appeals process. But she also said that the focus on the regulation is to make sure districts are following state law.
We're not reacting to the federal government. What we are is trying to meet the state statute that calls for that equitable funding.
In a memo for the regulation when it was introduced in June, Bishop wrote that one of the reasons for bringing the regulation change forward was to make sure it was in line with the federal disparity test. In his public testimony, Juneau School District Superintendent Frank Hauser referenced a letter from DEED appealing the results of the federal disparity test. The state claimed it would pass the test through a different calculation method and does not mention local contribution. Hauser says he wants the department to drop this regulation change.
I am terrified of version 3.0 of this regulation. Each subsequent attempt at this regulation change has had exponentially more negative impacts, impacts beyond what the department realizes even to REAAs, homeschool, and correspondence students.
Juneau officials estimated the district would have lost $8 million in funding if the regulation had gone through. In an email to KTOO after the decision, Hauser said he appreciates the board bringing the regulation back to the department to get more input, but, quote, that action begs the question why stakeholder input was not sought in the first place. Several testifiers, including Valdez City Schools Director of Technology Megan Gunderson, also mentioned the back and forth between the Anchorage School District and the department. The department posted on social media calling information from the district inaccurate.
When the agency responsible for leading and supporting Alaska schools uses public mockery and personal targeting, that is not communication. It is the breakdown of an essential partnership.
State Board of Education member Lieutenant Colonel James Fowley only had an advisory vote on the issue, but he said he wanted to ensure the department would come back with a list of districts it engaged with and recommendations.
In my learning on it, it is going to be incredibly complex, and it's probably going to vary between every single one of the districts. And so for the department, I think you're going to have to sharpen that pencil and really nug down through this.
In the meantime, the department says it will work with local stakeholders like district leaders and officials to gather more information. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
Some Alaskans are fired up about water pollution from heavy fuel oil burned on large cruise ships. At a panel discussion in Juneau on Wednesday, members of tribes and conservation organizations said there's a solution: using cleaner fuel. Heavy fuel oil is the stuff from the bottom of the barrel, the waste product at the end of the oil refining process. So it's cheaper than distillate fuels and used widely by most of the large cruise ships that travel along Alaska's coastline every year. When it's burned, heavy fuel oil exhaust releases sulfur oxide into the air, which can cause heart and lung disease and lead to acid rain. So in 2020, the International Maritime Organization, or IMO, required ships that burn heavy fuel oil to use scrubbers, which filter the exhaust through seawater. Aaron Brakel advocates for clean water at the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, which organized the panel. He said that didn't solve the pollution problem. It just moved it into the ocean.
And they spray the water, transferring pollutants from the air into the water, from the exhaust. And most of the scrubbers worldwide, most of the ones here in Alaska, are open-loop systems.
That means they pump seawater infused with toxic exhaust back into the ocean instead of storing it and disposing of it at an onshore facility. Brakel probed into U.S. Environmental Protection Agency records and found that between 2023 and 2024, 17 ships using open-loop scrubber systems reported more than 700 water quality violations off the coast of Alaska, as Alaska Public Media reported last month. Kay Brown is the Arctic Policy Director at Pacific Environment, an advocacy nonprofit. Last year, she and her colleagues published a literature review of studies around the world on the negative effects of scrubbers.
The big takeaway here is that scrubber pollution is toxic to marine life at very low concentrations.
Several Southeast tribes have passed resolutions calling for cleaner fuel, including the Yakutat-Tlingit Tribe, the Organized Village of Cake, the Organized Village of Kasan, and the Ketchikan Indian Community. Gloria Burns is president of the Ketchikan Indian Community. She says she wants cruise ships to take initiative.
This practice of fuel dumping makes the cruise ships an extractive industry.
And she says the onus is on the cruise industry to build a relationship of reciprocity instead. Cruise ships that burn heavy fuel oil are equipped to switch between fuel types. Some regulations have already taken effect in U.S. waters. Last year, the IMO banned heavy fuel oil in Arctic waters, with some fuel tank exceptions. Scrubber discharge is restricted in Hawaii's waters and banned within the Port of Seattle. California has long required ships to burn cleaner fuels upon entering its waters. Alaska State Senator Jesse Keel attended the panel. He says he's concerned about water pollution from scrubbers, but hasn't decided on a policy path yet. And he says he's been meeting with a lot of people about it, including cruise companies.
And we had some serious conversations, and they presented some research, some of which I bought and some of which I didn't.
A spokesperson from Cruise Lines International Association Alaska, which represents the cruise industry, wrote in an email that, quote, there is no scientific basis to support a ban on scrubbers, and that they, quote, remain an important compliance option as the maritime sector continues to reduce air emissions, end quote. Alex Pierce is Juneau's visitor industry director. In an interview, she said there's a long-standing voluntary commitment from cruise lines to switch to marine gas oil when they're in Gastineau Channel, while in Juneau's cruise port, and upon departure.
All we can do is make agreements and asked that they be followed. And even if we did have legislation, I don't know what our compliance program would look like.
She says the city has no reason to believe the ships aren't honoring the commitment. But in 2019, Governor Dunleavy axed state funding for the Ocean Rangers program that had observers aboard cruise ships. So there is no longer oversight on oil slicks. The state's wastewater permits and ship inspectors only address sewage and gray water, not scrubber discharge. But Pierce says the city is working to help find alternative shipping fuels through a partnership between ports and cruise lines called the Pacific Northwest to Alaska Green Corridor Project. She says the group will publish a report in the next few months looking at the feasibility of transitioning cruise ships to another fuel type called green methanol, which can be produced from municipal or agricultural waste. Juno's last cruise ship of the 2025 season will depart on Tuesday night. In Juno, I'm Alex Solomon. And an Anchorage restaurant worker who was detained by federal immigration officials in August has been released after a judge's ruling in a class action lawsuit. ICE arrested Santiago Martinez, a Mexican national seeking asylum in the U.S., on August 11th outside the sushi restaurant where he worked and sent him to the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma, Washington. Martinez is one of at least 56 people detained by ICE in Alaska this year, according to the State Department of Corrections, which jails detainees under a contract with the federal government. Margaret Stock, Martinez's lawyer, says immigration judges in Seattle were refusing to let detainees out on bond. She says a legal advocacy group called the Northwest Immigrants Rights Project filed a class action suit against the Seattle ICE field office.
They won their case, and they got an order from a federal judge saying that people cannot be detained, that their detention is unlawful.
U.S. District Court Judge Tiffany Cartwright issued a temporary restraining order, or TRO, requiring that Martinez be released. He officially left ICE custody on Tuesday. Stock says there have been similar rulings across the country in recent months, but that doesn't mean every detainee is being released.